Hello and welcome to Pumped, the inside podcast by Schwalbe. I'm your host Tobias Vaughan, and I'm talking here with Schwalbe athletes from different disciplines, from downhill to cross country, or from road riding to triathlon. And today I'm talking to Markus Stitz. A couple of years ago he cycled with his single speed bike around the world. Since then he did a lot of bikepacking adventures in the exotic countries around the world. In 2020, he decided to go back to his roots and cycle along the old German border, the Green Belt. What he experienced on that trip, you will find out in this episode of Pumped. Hey Markus! Thanks a lot for taking the time to do the podcast with us. Where are you right now?
I'm in my flat in Edinburgh, looking at a really nice blue sky outside, which happens quite a lot in the morning, but we normally get clouds in the afternoon.
But yeah, yeah, I mean, beautiful blue, day. I would say blue sky in Edinburgh is not that common, huh?
Actually, the weather is not too bad in Scotland, especially like in the morning. It's normally quite nice. That's why I kind of taught myself to be an early riser, because mornings are normally super, especially in winter. If you get rain, it's normally in the afternoon. But we had loads of snow the last couple of days, so it's very unusual for Scotland at the moment, the weather here.
So how cold is it at your place at the moment?
So inside it's, I don't know, 22 degrees or whatever the room temperature is.
And outside?
Outside, I think I had a look. I think it's between -2 and -3, but it was much colder last night, actually. I was cycling after the sunset, and I cycled home, and there were like stretches on the road where it was pretty icy and cold. So I think the lowest we had in Scotland on Wednesday night was -22 or something. So whoa. Yeah, it was pretty chilly, but it never gets that cold in Edinburgh. Like it's not too bad here.
So you've been living in the UK for quite a while now. How did you get there?
Oh, it's a bit of a long story, actually. I was an exchange student in England, in Northumberland, and for half a year, and I was in Sunderland near Newcastle, and then went up to Edinburgh quite a few times while I was at university there. Mm-hmm. And really loved the city. And then I went back and did an internship in New York in 2005, and had about a month to spare afterwards, and thought like, oh, it's a good opportunity to go back to Edinburgh and try to find a job there just for the summer. And that's what I did. And then I ended up coming back here pretty much every summer since then. And then I had a 2-year stint living in New Zealand, and then left New Zealand after 2 years because I wanted to be a bit closer to my family again. And then decided, I had a decision between Germany and Scotland, and decided for Scotland because I think for a number of reasons. I had a job offer over here, so it was pretty easy to get something, and yeah, just love the city and like the surroundings. There's some lovely mountains, a bit of sea as well, so just the whole setting of the city was pretty fascinating, and yeah, I've stayed ever since.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I understand you, because Scotland for me is really one of my favorite places to go, and Edinburgh is just an amazing city. So you're lucky. You're living on the great place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's a smallish place, but it feels bigger. Like I think it's pretty open minded. But it's not a big city actually. You can get across it quite easily by bike. Walking is a little bit more difficult, but yeah, nice place.
Definitely. So you're original from Germany. You grew up in the eastern part of Germany, and that's where you started to cycling, right? How did you get into cycling?
I think possibly quite unconventional as well. So I So I learned cycling pretty late because I was always a bit, I wasn't the most sporty of children. Like I was always quite happy to play inside, and I mean I love being outside as well, but like sport was never my favorite subject. So I learned on my mum's bike when I was 6 or 7 years old, but I'm not entirely sure what age. And then I just did cycling, as I think every child in Germany rides bicycles. I think that's quite a common thing. And then I really got into like a bit more, I don't want to call it serious cycling, because for me cycling is not about being serious at all. Actually, it's mostly about having a good time. But I did a I studied at the University of Ilmenau in the Thuringian Forest, and that's a lovely, amazing area for mountain biking. And so finally just got my head around, look, I'm living in this amazing place here. There's so much opportunity. I literally could jump on my bike. I was on the outskirts of town in a shared flat, and I could just go out in the forest and ride my bike on some amazing trails. And I thought, like, I might as well do that for the 5 years I'm here, or however long it takes to study. And yeah, and when I did that, I think I'm in some aspects quite an addictive personality. So if I do something, I want to do it properly. Like as a child, for example, to give you some example, I had a stamp collection, and I think it must have been a right pain for my parents, because like I was always wanting to get new stamps and stuff like this. Then for a while, I worked as DJ, so I collected records and CDs, and then finally got into cycling. Although I'm not, I'm not the sort of cyclist who collects bikes just for the sake of it, but once I start something, I want to do it properly, and that's what I did. And then, yeah, slowly but surely got into mountain biking, did some longer distance rides as well. And then when I moved to New Zealand, I really picked up the cycle touring bug, and then combined cycle touring with off-road riding, and eventually ended up in bikepacking and gravel riding. But yeah, like, yeah, it was, I think my PE teacher would be highly surprised if he would see me nowadays, someone who is just trying to skip every PE lesson at school whenever possible. But I was always like, even as a child, I was always good at endurance stuff. So I loved, like, when at school, when we had to run like 1 kilometer or 3 kilometers, I was okay with that. I just didn't like the short-term sprinting stuff whatsoever. It just wasn't, I'm just not built for this, I think. So yeah, this is how I got into cycling, kind of. But I, not from a club cycling background, for example. Like I was never really, any competitive as a child getting into it. For me, it was always about like more modes of transport rather than anything else.
Yeah, nice. So from the woods in Thuringia to the streets around the world, or the gravel roads around the world, now to Edinburgh. How is the cycling today for you? When you pick up your bike and go, go riding on your home trails or on your home routes, how does it look like?
I think it has changed quite significantly over the years. What it looks like now is, as I mentioned beforehand, for me it's mainly about having fun, doing something which is good for me, and inspires other people. I used to I went from kind of cycle touring and then into ultra endurance for a while, meaning that I rode, like, the longest I've ridden in a day was 424 kilometers, which is quite a distance. And I still love doing those things, so I'm still racing. I'm still doing things like the Silk Road Mountain Race or the Atlas Mountain Race. But I'm also now working on developing new cycling routes, and just literally, I think the most important thing for me is to encourage other people to cycle. I think that's quite important with whatever I'm doing. But also at the same time, for me, I still love cycling. I've never really lost the cycling bug. There's obviously times sometimes where you lose your mojo a little bit, and I think that's totally normal. That's like with any other activity. I think you can't do things like full guns blazing all the time. Then really need to be times where you kind of like dip down a little bit, and then actually in those times we discover how much fun it really is. Like, and then it was just like, and to give you an example, for example, yesterday I was out riding my bike in the snow, which doesn't happen often that often over here. We had an amazing winter so far. And you know, there were stretches in there where I had to push my bike. There were stretches in there which were just amazing to ride. And there were bits in there where I thought like, well, I have to do this to get to another cool place to ride. So I think that's kind of what my cycling looks like. And yeah, it's I think it's very different from the ultra endurance days where I was just head down and go to from A to B in the quickest possible way. Although I always had a reputation for being the one that actually stops for pictures and, you know, ending up after a race like the Highland Trail 550 with a camera full of pictures, and people were like, why would you do this? And I was just, because I'm out here in an amazing landscape, you know, why would I not stop every now and then and just take in the scenery?
In 2015, you rode on a single trail bike around the world. How did you get the idea to ride around the world, and why on a single speed?
So the single speed comes back from my days when I lived in Wellington. I was I had quite a few friends in Wellington in New Zealand who back then were careers or working in bike shops, and there was the time when single speed was kind of becoming fashionable again, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And I never really had the guts to get a single speed bike when I was in New Zealand, because Wellington is really, really hilly. And then I moved back here, and what I really missed was the time over Christmas I had in New Zealand for 2 years, where I could just go ride my bike and have a cycling trip over Christmas. So when I moved back here, at my first Christmas, just sitting around doing nothing, and I thought that's not what I want to do. This is not what I am. And the second year, I thought like, I'm gonna cycle home from Edinburgh to Germany for Christmas, and you know, do this regardless. And the next thought was like, how am I gonna do this with like a bike where loads of things couldn't potentially go wrong, derailleurs and etc. etc. So I thought like, this is a good time to get a single speed bike now. Keep it as simple as possible, and make sure that it's not the bike which is the failure on the trip. If it all fails, it will be you, not the bike. So I bought a single speed bike. I'd never ridden it beforehand. It was quite tough at the beginning because you obviously got no choice and you really have to have the legs to get up the hill.
Yeah.
But I did this trip, cycled home for 14 days, absolutely loved it. By the time I was home, I also got used to single speed riding, and then I just continued riding a single speed. And I always had this idea of riding around the world since I actually was on the plane to New Zealand, because I read a book by a guy called Tim Molyneux. Mm-hmm. Who cycled all the way from London to Christchurch, and really, really nice book, super interesting account of his trip, yeah, basically around the world, although he just went basically in one direction, so he didn't do a whole loop. And I thought like, this sounds pretty cool, you know. I think at some stage in my life I'd quite like to take a year off and yeah, do something with it and, you know, see a bit more of the world. And when I had the opportunity to do that I had a contract which was due to expire for work, and then I got renewed, and I thought like, right, this is a good time now to kind of really make a break, take a year off, take a bike and cycle around the world. And that was, it's possibly as simple as that. And then I thought like, I've ridden a single speed bike for 5 years now. It's been great. I could cope with it. It's such an easy bike to ride because you don't really have to care about any mechanical things. It just runs. Dump it in a corner and yeah, it just runs. And I thought like, right, if I'm doing a round the world trip, the last thing I want to care about is my bike. You know, I want to have a year of meeting new people and experiencing new countries and going to different climate zones. And yeah, I thought like having a single speed bike makes this just all much easier and much more enjoyable. And so yeah, I went to get a bike for this made its English beat and set off around the world in September.
So riding around the world is quite a mission. After that, you did a couple of different bikepacking trips. And last year, you went back to your childhood and cycled the Green Belt, so the old former German border. Why do you decide to do this route?
So again, it's one of those things I had in my mind for, I think, a number of years, because I grew up very, very close to the former border. I grew up in the Eichsfeld, which was one of those regions in Germany that was divided into East and West Germany, basically. And so all of this was very, very close to my own life, to, you know, to whatever you want to call it, my life history whatsoever. And my dad died in 2015 when I was on the round the world trip, and he was always very interested in the history. He was he got to see a lot of the region, because even in East German times he was allowed to travel because he was fixing people's televisions. So from all of that, I had a very close relationship with that chapter in German history. And I also think it's utterly fascinating. And I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned as well from that, for some of the situations we are in right now. Because it is about, it, like, the whole thing for me is people peacefully taking down this border and reuniting a country. And I think it's such a positive story. But I sometimes think, I think in Germany it's possibly it's kind of vanishing a little bit. And, you know, if it, and for me it was kind of like, so basically 30 years after, I thought, like, this is a great opportunity. I've matured as a person. I've got different views on some of the things right now as well, because I can look at things with much more distance living in Scotland now. And it was also, you know, last year with all the travel restrictions, I was pretty sure I can't go anywhere exotic in the world, and I had absolutely no intention to do so. So I thought, like, this is a great time to actually spend a bit more time in Germany again, spend a bit more time with my family, and at the same time using my own personal story to in a sense, this sounds really marketing speech and I wouldn't want to be that way, but, you know, to kind of promote Germany as a destination for other people to come. You know, I think generally speaking, for me, it's a wonderful country to travel. I have some fantastic experiences, but it's definitely not the country that would pop up on the top 10 lists where people are thinking about mountain biking or gravel riding or cycle touring or bikepacking. So I thought, like, look, I've made my living from promoting destinations for bikepacking and gravel riding, and this is where I grew up, so I might as well use those skills in order to do exactly that. And yeah, it was amazing. I had an amazing adventure, and I was also quite keen. My background, I haven't spoken about that yet, but I do plan long distance bikepacking routes now, predominantly in Scotland, and so the good thing about that route is I had quite a bit of local knowledge as well. I've been riding my bike in that area for quite a while, so I felt like I'm gonna use the Green Belt and the Eurovelo 13 as a blueprint, but I want to kind of design a route which takes in my local knowledge, local knowledge, that's a tricky word, at the same time. And so, yeah, and so I designed the route and wrote it, and it was fascinating. It was a proper adventure.
So the original route of the Green Belt, or of the German border, it consists on a large extent on these tank plates with holes in it. And I've ridden a couple of Ks on these tank plates. Come on. And it's super hard to ride it. So how did you rode it for so many kilometers?
Yeah, so this was one of the reasons why I did design my own route, which was trying to avoid the Kolonnenweg, as much as possible. It's fine to ride on a bike, so it's not non-rideable. I wouldn't describe it as pleasure. You know, it's like I had to leave stretches of it in which were either really significant in terms of history. So an example for that, for example, is Point Alpha, where you basically cycle through the museum, and I think not going through there would not, you know, I think it's one of those places that I would highly recommend to other people to yeah. go there, just to see the sheer scale of A, what the fortifications were like, but also I love the story of the Americans and the Russians facing each other with about 50 meters apart for decades, and you know, it was just like the history. So I try to avoid the Kolonvik as much as possible sometimes, and I think this is the interesting thing as well, because it is some of the old border is the historic Prussian border as well. So there are actually quite a lot of gravel tracks or forest tracks or whatever you want to call them, double tracks, mm-hmm. which are really nice to cycle on, that almost run parallel to the border. So I used those as much as possible. And I was also really keen not to just to cycle on the former border on the Queen Belt, because I think you are quite remote. And one part of the route I've designed is about like dipping into those villages along the border, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like there's some great places there as well. And for me as a child, having grown up in East Germany, I think we were brought up with this perception is that, you know, we are somehow different. and it was interesting. So if you don't have the knowledge where you are, if that used to be West or East Germany, I honestly think you would not recognize where you are. Like, I think in some areas it's recognizable because they have different shape church towers, because they're either Catholic or Protestant. So, you know, if yeah. you're into all of those details, you will get a good notion where you are. If you're not, I don't think you can recognize it any longer. And I think this is, for me, again, I'm 41 now, no, 42 actually, oh dear. and, you know, I think I'm one of those generations that has been growing up until I was 10 years old, in a country divided, and then mm-hmm. in the United Germany. And I think for me, doing this trip, it was really, really nice to see that there's not really much there any longer that divides one part of the country from the other one. Yeah. And I think that's possibly not what you get to experience if you just stick on the Queen Belt. It's amazing landscape, it's amazing nature, but I think it does help to go a little bit off the track every now and then and just kind of like, yeah, focus on some of the details as well, which are not directly on the route. And yeah, amazing experience. Just great. Kind of like, and it's like the Kolonovic, back to that topic. So I was on a gravel bike, and I think this route is, you know, if you're on a fat bike with 4.8 inch tires, you'll possibly be cruising along those plates, those concrete plates. On the mountain bike, I think it's still enjoyable. If you're on a gravel bike, not so much. You really need to know how to ride, and you really need to pick your line over this. And I think it's also, it's one of those routes, if you just ride on those plates, you really need to have a tubeless setup, because otherwise you'll be fixing punctures left, right and center.
Definitely, yeah.
but yeah, like, yeah, parts of it are fine, but yeah, whenever I could, I try to avoid it.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds like a great adventure. Is there one thing that stuck with you from this trip? One special moment or one feeling or something?
Yes. I mean, there was one pretty sketchy episode in there as well. and also subsequently, I've taken that bit out of the route, actually, because it was possibly something that would make or break people's adventure. I think there was this one So I had this, I was going to a forest and there were loads and loads of wild boar holes in there, and it was utterly steep as well. So I was pushing my bike up this super steep hill, and then I was looking at the downhill and it was even steeper, and that on a gravel bike was just not rideable at all. So I was in this dark forest by myself. I think the furthest away I have been from a village on that route, which was basically maybe 10 kilometers or so, you know, nothing remote in from what the stuff I've been, I mean, I've been riding in the mountains in Kyrgyzstan or across the desert in Australia. So if you put that in perspective, it was not, you know, not anywhere of that scale, but it was quite sketchy. And I think I was quite happy that I was the kind of close to a town after 2.5 hours, and actually made the supermarket with 5 minutes to spare until it closed. But I think, like, on the positive note, I think there was this very one moment where I was sitting in a bird shelter listening to the birds, like, had rolled out my sleeping bag, was just having a nice tea with fresh ginger, and I was just looking at this amazing starlit sky and listening to those birds, and I thought, like, this is amazing. Like, you know, I'm in one of the most populated countries in Europe, and you still have those places where you can literally just sit by yourself. There's no one around. Had a great day on the bike that day, and I can just enjoy, you know, the bird song around here. And that was, yeah, it was super special. And there were kind of quite a few moments like this. But yeah, that particular night was pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. So bikepacking in particular, or in general, becoming more and more popular, and a lot of people want to try it. What would you recommend to people who want to try to go on the bikepacking trip the first time? How do you start?
That's an interesting one. I think with everything I'm doing, try to have a positive attitude to it and make it fun. And I think it really depends on where your starting point is. So if you are a novice cyclist who has just learned to cycle, and is possibly not too confident with your own company, then just do a very short trip. You know, you can, like, as I was describing, like the one night on the Iron Curtain gravel trail, you can just find places which are very close to home, which don't put you in any sort of danger or a negative mindset for failure. And so twice small, I think, is my basic advice. In terms of equipment, I think any bike will do. Like, I don't think bikepacking requires a certain bike. I think you can I've been riding a 1970s single speed, and I've been riding I think the only bike I haven't used for bikepacking is a full Suss mountain bike, but any other bike kind of has done the job in the meantime. And I think if you don't, like, I think one ingredient which is quite essential is having good bags, because they'll keep your stuff dry. They'll also allow you to have a really nice riding experience, because they don't dangle around on your saddle or on your handlebars or whatsoever. I think you don't really need, if you only want to try it for the first time, and I think the question also is, what is bikepacking? I think for me, bikepacking is strapping your luggage on your bike without any pannier racks and going wherever you want to go. It's possibly as generic as a definition I could find. I'm pretty sure there will be people who've got a very defined opinion about what is not bikepacking, what is not. I really don't care, to be honest with you, because I think in the end of the day it's all cycling as well. So, you know, it's just, I think pigeonholing things too much, I don't think is helpful in that discussion. But strap, you know, I think if you don't have any bags, possibly you'll have someone you know who will possibly be happy to lend you some and give you an opportunity to try them. You know, buying them will set you off by quite a bit of money to begin with, so I'm not sure, you know, if you do it once and then decide this is not for me, not sure if that's the right thing. So, you know, just, I think generally speaking, go out with whatever you have in your cupboard or whatever you can borrow from someone and give it a go. I'm yet to hear anyone who didn't have a good time. You know, I have not met a single person so far who's tried it and said, oh, this was rubbish, I'm not going to do this again. Yeah. I think it's very much the opposite of people. People not really, I think the fear for a lot of people is that they are not comfortable with the fact that they're by themselves somewhere outside, out of their known environment. And I think what you discover is exactly the opposite, that it's actually once you're out there and once you get used to the fact that you've done it, you can have such an amazing time. Like, I, mm-hmm. you know, I had the best moments in my life sleeping in a tent somewhere in the middle of nowhere or in a bivy bag or, I don't know, under the stars. You know, if it's a warm night, then you don't even need a sleeping bag sometimes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, try small. Once you've done one trip, just up, like gradually go further, do more things. And also, I think what is really important for bikepacking is to know your own comfort zone and know your own limits really well. But this is something you won't experience on your first bikepacking trip ever. It's like with, you know, if you do any form of cycling, the more you do it, the better you get at it, and the more fun it is in the end. You know, I think if you go mountain biking and you've never been on a mountain bike, it's possibly quite a scary and quite annoying thing at times as well, when you come off and you possibly hurt yourself and you go like, why am I doing this? I think if you've been on a mountain bike for a year or two and you've been riding and you can ride more things, then it becomes much more fun and much more rewarding as well. So yeah, and take that same attitude to bikepacking, and I think it will be fun.
And what are the three things you really should have on a bikepacking trip, or you won't leave without it?
We three things. I think some sort of emergency device is really important. Just I think for two things, for peace of mind and also being able to get yourself out of a place if you really need to. You know, I think mobile phone or satellite tracker is important mm-hmm. for me. Just for confidence. I feel like if I know I've got a backup, I ride much better and I've got much more fun. Don't have to focus on every time focusing on what could go wrong and whatever. Yeah. So that's important. What else? I normally don't leave without my Opinel knife as well, because it's uh-huh. quite a handy tool to either fix things or to buy some stuff and make your own dinner. So that's quite important as well. And the other thing is also, it's possibly not to bikepacking specifically, but having the right tools to fix your bike, you know, just like basic things like a pump, spare tube, and those sort of things. So, you know, something that will allow you to fix your bike and get from a very remote place to a not so remote place. Or I think the other thing which is important is a camera as well. It's just to kind of, you know, sometimes capturing those moments as well. But also, you know, don't try to, I think for me, bikepacking is a perfect thing to put my phone on airplane mode and really kind of zone out and say like, this is me gone for the moment. Yeah. Whatever phone call will not be important at the moment, because I really try to enjoy the moment. When I'm back, I can happily deal with those phone calls. So yeah, but it's a tricky thing, kind of, you know. I think it's very, what it certainly won't be is a dangling muck on my thing, because that would drive me nuts. I'm trying to, like, whenever I pack, I try to pack as neatly as possible so there's no noise on the bike, because that's yeah. something, it's possibly quite a personal thing, but I, like, if I've got noise of some shape or form, that's just something that is not nice. I think I can deal with that for 5 minutes, yeah. but no longer than that.
But I totally agree. I mean, noise on the bikes are super annoying, especially when you're riding for days or months. 2020 was a really weird year and nothing went as planned. Do you have any plans for the future? So any trips in mind what you want to do in 2021 or even later?
Yeah, I've got plans. I think if that's happening this year, I'm a bit doubtful about that, to be honest with you. So my plans this year are for Scotland more than anywhere else, because this is where I am, and I'm confident that there will be some sort of travel happening soonish here. In Scotland this year, I'm working on a new project developing cycling routes in the Catterone Echo Museum. Mm-hmm. And also working, one aspect of my work is, for me, is cycling is such a sustainable mode of transport that I really want to push that when it comes to traveling as well. I think really trying to reduce my own carbon footprint. But I also kind of, I was always trying to tell a positive story about climate change. And that project is a great opportunity to do so. The idea behind it is it's a museum without walls. You can cycle in a museum, basically. That's mm-hmm. kind of the idea behind it. There's like standing stones and there's old settlements and loads of things actually that show the past and that actually encourage us to think about the future as well. So, you know, I think I always try to kind of see, so what impact do I have on the world right now? And, you know, what about the generations to come that mm-hmm. kind of have to deal with that? Part of that will be a new film. And yeah, like if you want to put it in a nutshell, I really want to tell a positive story about climate change. So climate change in itself is not positive, but I think I often sometimes think the way we talk about it doesn't promote it. You know, we always talk about that we have to reduce ourselves and we cannot do certain things. And the idea behind that project is to kind of say, yeah, if you're reducing yourself, this is actually a positive thing. Like it kind of ties mm-hmm. in quite well with the bikepacking narrative. You kind of have to take very few things and you need to make the most out of them. So that's one project. It's very close to home. And it's definitely going to happen, hopefully, let's say. I'd also quite like to go back to Germany to do a bit more stuff over there. But at the moment, I'm not too sure how I'm able to do this, because at the moment I can't travel.
Yeah.
Because if I travel right now, I have to put myself in a hotel quarantine, and I'm just not willing to do that. So, you know, yeah. I get the message. I'm happy to stay here for the time being until it's fine to do that. There's a couple of other projects that I've got on my head, on my mind. I definitely want to do some cold weather cycling. Whether that be in the Arctic or somewhere else. I love cycling in the snow. I like frosty landscapes, and I also like having limited daylight. So putting all of that in a future trip would be fantastic. It's something I was wanting to do for quite a while now, but yeah, the timing never really fitted quite well. So this is maybe something that might happen in 2022 mm-hmm. with a bit of planning time. And also a continent I haven't explored so far, and this is, I think, not going to be possible this year, but hopefully in future years, is Africa. Mm-hmm. I was planning to do a trip to Malawi last year because I was working with the Scotland Malawi partnership in a job I had beforehand. So, and yeah, just like, I think it's one of those continents I haven't explored other than being in Morocco for a race. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think like just looking at the country from a very outsider's perspective for the moment, I think it looks like a fascinating place. And yeah, so those are some ideas, but yeah, not sure. I think one thing that has been sticking in my conscience since last year is that I think planning at the moment is just totally impossible, you know. And I think it's about setting expectations, and I don't want to set myself up for. One thing I love about trips, and I think that's the one thing I'm missing at the moment as well, like, you know, that anticipation when you have an idea and then you develop the idea and then you make it happen. And I think that's the most interesting phase. Going out on a trip itself is amazing as well, but I, you know, the preparation is sometimes even more fascinating. And I think at the moment that is just not viable. You know, I think if you do that and you kind of go, oh, I'd really like to do this, and then you kind of go like, right, I can't do this because it's just simply not possible. So, you know, I'm trying to keep things quite local at the moment. There's a few other projects I'm looking to do in Scotland as well. I've got some lovely material I've shot last year on the west coast of Scotland, so I'm hoping to do something with that. And I've also got some pictures and a lot of video material from a trip in Patagonia. And yeah, I'd love to. I still hadn't had the chance, the time to do something with the material. So I think possibly this year is, in a year, possibly a good year to catch up on things and kind of like trying to do some of those projects I'd been looking, like where I basically have the material and I just busy enough to create new stuff all the time, and you kind of go like, you know, this is actually quite a nice year to sit back a little bit. And another idea I have, I'd really love to do a book about bikepacking and gravel riding in Scotland, and yeah, I don't think there's ever been a better time to do that, so that will hopefully happen as well.
Great, Marcus, thanks a lot for your time to do the podcast with us, and it was a pleasure to chatting with you about bikepacking. I wish you all the best for 2021, and that all your plans work out. And yeah, hopefully we see us soon in Scotland.
That sounds amazing. And likewise, also happy to come to Germany at some stage again if I'm allowed to.
Perfect.
Brilliant. So,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.